Of course, the story of the day is the Democrat National Convention, and we thought we would open up with some conventional bombast. Sufjan Stevens there from his album Illinois, I suppose appropriate enough for Barack Obama. And I just do have to mention the name of that track because it's a doozy. It's called The Black Hawk War, or How to Demolish an Entire Civilization and Still Feel Good About Yourself in the Morning, or We Apologize for the Inconvenience But You're Going to Have to Leave Now, or I'll Have Fought the Big Knives and Will Continue to Fight Them Until They Are Off Our Lands. And by the time you got through the title, the song is finished. But to America now, where of course today we heard President Barack Obama delivering his address to the Democratic Convention in Charlotte, North Carolina. The president urged Americans to return him to the White House in a typically rousing speech that charted the key ideological and strategic differences between the Democrats and Republicans in 2012.
We don't think the government can solve all of our problems, but we don't think that the government is the source of all of our problems. Any more than our welfare recipients, or corporations, or unions, or immigrants, or gays, or any other group we're told to blame for our troubles.
And the president also spoke about his vision for the American economy, a key issue, of course, spruiking his agenda to create millions of jobs. And he gave Republicans a bit of a serve, no surprises there, claiming that they offered tired solutions to the nation's economic troubles.
Our friends down in Tampa at the Republican convention were more than happy to talk about everything they think is wrong with America. But they didn't have much to say about how they'd make it right. And that's because all they have to offer is the same prescriptions they've had for the last 30 years. Have a surplus? Try a tax cut. Deficit too high? Try another. Feel a cold coming on? Take two tax cuts, roll back some regulations, and call us in the morning.
Bit of wit there from the president. And, of course, he also attacked Republicans on foreign policy, criticizing their approach to both Iraq and Afghanistan.
My opponent and his running mate are new to foreign policy. My opponent said that it was tragic to end the war in Iraq. And he won't tell us how he'll end the war in Afghanistan. Well, I have, and I will.
Obama was in fine form. Now, of course, it was journalistic and political theatre at its most circus-like, the conventions. And, of course, that means that there have been plenty of journos descending to cover the hoo-ha. Apparently, over 15,000 journalists turning up to see the Democrat convention. One man who's very critical of that is the author and blogger at buzzmachine.com, Jeff Jarvis. He says that the conventions are, I think he's got a fair point, they're just political infomercials with little news value. And he's critical of all the journos turning up, saying that the only reason that they're there is because of ego and very few of them getting genuine scoops. Harsh words from Jeff Jarvis, who I spoke to earlier today. Jeff Jarvis, thanks very much for joining us once again on RN Drive.
A pleasure.
Well, look, you seem to have appointed yourself party pooper-in-chief, Jeff. We've had the leader of the free world speaking to his party today. Earlier in the week, we saw Michelle Obama, Bill Clinton, waxing lyrical for an hour. Why wouldn't journalists flock to an event like this?
Because nothing happens. It's all scripted. It's an infomercial, heavy on the commercial, light on the info. It's nothing but a promotional event. And yet 15,000 accredited journalists have gone to each event. And why? One word, ego. They want to be there because they want to say they've been there, and their organizations want to say, we have our man or our woman at the convention. But it's absolutely ludicrous. It is a waste of money in an industry that can ill afford to waste a single penny.
Well, you've crunched some pretty amazing numbers on what the effect of this many journalists going to both the Democrat and Republican conventions are. Can you run us through how it stacks up?
If you take 15,000 accredited journalists, which is the case, for each of the conventions, and multiply that times the number of hotel rooms plus an airfare each, it's easily $60 million. By the way, plus their salaries, plus all the fancy clubs and events and other things that are invested in here. But just figure $60 million. This industry is dying. It's just plain dying. Look at what's happening in Australia, where your newspapers are losing staff right and left, and we can ill afford to do this kind of obvious event coverage.
Isn't it the case, though, that while what's happening front of stage is clearly stage managed, made for the media, if there are real stories to be found at the convention, it's going to be behind the scenes, in the corridors, in the toilets, overhearing conversations, doing the sort of foot-slogging journalism that you need people on the ground to be able to do?
Foot-slogging journalism in a toilet. It's a bad image. But even so, I haven't seen any good journalism there. Just today, there was a big hoo-ha over the fact that the words Jerusalem and God were left out of the Democratic platform. Mm. Well, the only reason that got a ton of coverage today, because it was the only unexpected thing that happened. And it wasn't really news. It really didn't matter. But there was no real news. These things have been absolutely stage managed. There really isn't anything to get behind the scenes. There really isn't any news at all.
Do you think this is different from the old days? I mean, I imagine if you went to a convention in the 20s or 30s, they would have been pretty rigorously stage managed as well.
No, it was different then because you really didn't necessarily know who was going to win coming out. Mm. And there was a fight that occurred on the floor. Now everything is known before you go in. And so everything is safe, and it's produced for TV. Now, meanwhile, our TV networks have said, yawn, there's nothing going on. So they're putting fewer and fewer hours on the air in broadcasts.
I suppose it's certainly the case that there was more policy in Bill Clinton's speech than many of the others. He focused on the impact of the Republican plan for Medicaid. Has that been picked up by these thousands of journalists who were there, or are they just all about the hoo-ha of, you know, the former presidential family rivals reuniting back on stage?
You know, I don't know what's happening in the thousand towns across America where they've sent their own journalists, but what I've seen pretty much is the same story everywhere. Bill Clinton spoke. He had a, you know, rousing speech. We all saw it live on TV. Then we saw a recap of it on the wires on the internet. And then 8, 10, 12 hours later, we saw the same thing again. We don't need that anymore. The world has changed.
I suppose the quandary that every little or large media organization faces, Jeff Jarvis, is what's the alternative? Do we just let all the reporters go home and let Fox News cover it exclusively for everyone?
Oh, Fox News, you've stacked the deck there. Well, yeah, pretty much. I would say that if I were a news organization, if I were in charge of one, and believe me, no one will put me in charge of one, I would say we are not going to go to conventions. We're going to stay home. We're going to listen to the voters. And we're going to find out what the issues that really matter. And we're going to talk about the things that are not being talked about at the convention. That would be the real news.
I mean, I suppose that there's a question there as well. Having more journalists on the ground, does that net increase the diversity of perspectives, or does it have a kind of groupthink effect?
Absolutely, that's the case. It's far more that the mob moves together, and they're moved behind barricades. If you watch Twitter with the journalists now, you can see them complaining about how they're not getting, you know, cold sodas or whatever they need, and they're all doing the same things because there's really no place to go. And if you go on the floor of the convention, what are you going to see? Delegates who are there in some kind of honor for having done patronage in their local politics, and they're not really making any decisions. They're not really doing anything that matters. There's nothing to cover. That's the ridiculous thing about this.
So just cancel the conventions altogether, Jeff Jarvis?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that these days we have a new thing called the internet, and it allows us to communicate with each other and to do all kinds of things like have fancy polls and all kinds of other stuff. The entire expense that's gone into these conventions is more than the $60 million that I attribute to the journalists. God knows it's hundreds of millions of dollars. And you know what? With our current economy, we can't afford the party anymore.
Well, it's a fine idea. I'll be interested to see whether any of the party executives or hard-headed executives of the TV networks or the small local newspapers cancel their tickets to the party, Jeff Jarvis, but I'm pretty sure you're not going to be invited to the next media one after this little onslaught. Thank you very much for joining us on RN Drive this
evening. Have the party without me. Thank you much.
Well, Jeff Jarvis says there's absolutely no point going to the Democratic National Convention. We thought we would test that theory by now speaking to a man who is about as far away from the DNC as it's possible to be, co-host of Planet America, Chaz Litchidello. Chaz, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Jeff says that the conventions are a waste of time and that we should be talking about real substantive policy issues. So talk us through from the Democrat side. What are the big three issues that these conventions haven't been talking about?
Okay, first of all, people like to talk about unemployment at conventions. But what they never mention with unemployment is even if you have a job in America, the working wage is too low to survive. $7 an hour is not enough for anyone to survive on. That's the first thing. So how do you provide for people who don't have enough money to pay for rent, etc., even when they have a full-time job? That's a big issue in America. Also, what happens when people are unemployed and they drop off the unemployment rolls because they only last for 50, 60 weeks in America? And if you have a recession going for 4 years, tough luck. You're off the unemployment rolls, you have no money. They never discuss that. That's the first issue.
Are these the sorts of issues? I mean, does Obama have a policy on that?
No.
Right, because it's just convenient not for them not to address it.
Well, just people, when you start talking about that kind of thing, people go, oh, welfare, bludgers, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Okay.
And it's rubbish, but that's just the culture of American politics.
All right, okay. Well, what are the other issues
Second
we're missing?
Second issue, 31% of mortgages in America are underwater. That means people owe more money to the bank than their house is actually worth if they sold it. 31%. What's Obama doing about it? Nothing. It's just too hard.
Chas, I'm starting to think you should mount a late presidential bid at this rate.
I have no solutions either. Thirdly, this very week, the last investigation into torture was dismissed. Now, officially, zero people will be prosecuted for torture under the Bush regime.
Now, this, I suppose, is in a way what Obama pledged, because he never really wanted to go after the people in the Bush regime who were pro-torture.
He certainly didn't want to go after the people who administered it, the people who advanced the policy. But yep. What he did say was if people were obviously breaking the law, then that's a different matter altogether. Like the actual people who say we're sadists or something like that. It's one thing to say you're allowed torture within certain realms. It's another thing to say if someone just starts killing people or just shooting people in the head, that's legal. And the situation is even the worst of the worst have now been let off.
Oh, what a happy note. all right, well, not much joy to be had out of the DNC then. Are the Republicans a different story? Are they ignoring big issues as well?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, first one for the Republicans is they love to talk about how you lower the overall tax rate, but then you close tax loopholes in order to balance the budget. They are yet to say a single tax loophole.
Right.
And they're talking about trillions of dollars of tax cuts here, $5-6 trillion of tax cuts, and they haven't named one loophole that they are supposedly going to close in order to pay for those tax cuts.
Do such loopholes exist? Or
There's heaps of them, but all of them target the middle class.
Right.
And so no one is ever going to close any of them. Things like mortgage relief, charity donations, research, those kinds of things. There's lots of them. Manufacturing exemptions for local manufacturers, etc. They're all they're all exemptions for politically convenient reasons.
Right.
And so you can't close them because you'll pay at the ballot box.
Okay, all right. What else are the Republicans not talking about?
They keep on talking about balancing the budget, and yet Mitt Romney wants to increase the military budget by significant amounts without him even saying what he's going to spend it on. Now, Bill Clinton mentioned this himself yesterday, and he's spot on. It's weird because the military don't want to increase their budget, but Mitt Romney wants to increase their budget.
Right.
And he hasn't said what he wants to spend it on, and he hasn't said how he's going to pay for it.
Presumably just because it's a good Republican calling card to say you're going to increase defense spending.
Exactly.
All right.
And I might add, by the way, that Obama will also increase defense spending. Just okay. Mitt Romney will increase it by more.
Yeah.
No one ever decreases military spending in America, Jules.
All right.
And the third one is the Republicans are very keen on their competition healthcare policy, where they say what we're going to do is we're going to reduce prices overall by having lots and lots of competition. We'll have competition across state lines, etc. Now, what they never ever say is when you get rid of all the subsidies from Obamacare and you get rid of all the Medicaid, which is medical insurance for the poor, which is what they're saying they're going to do. Mm. Even with competition, even if you lower prices, that just means that the prices move from $20,000 a year for a policy to $15,000 a year for a policy. People who earn less than $30,000 or $40,000 are not going to be able to afford healthcare. What do you do for them? They don't have a single answer.
Sounds like there's not a whole lot of hope for big policy improvements after the election.
But can you see why they don't mention these at conventions, Bill?
Indeed, indeed. Having said that, I mean, who did you think was the most substantive speaker on either of the conventions?
By a very long way, it was Bill Clinton. In fact, he was the only substantive speaker on either side. Like, Obama completely ignored policy. The Republicans didn't touch policy. Mm. Bill Clinton spent a good part of half an hour of his 50-minute speech on policy. In fact, if we have time, there was one policy he mentioned, which I would have put in here if Bill Clinton hadn't mentioned it.
Okay, go on, talk us through.
Which is, I briefly mentioned Medicaid, which is health insurance for the poor. Almost the only difference between the two parties in this election when it comes to healthcare spending is that that Republicans are going to cut Medicaid by $1.4 trillion. And what that means is 30 million less poor people will have health insurance under Republicans and Democrats. The Democrats never mention that. They never mention it because it involves poor people. And you don't like to mention poor people when you run in America.
It's all about the middle class.
It's all about the middle class. Poor people don't vote. And even poor people don't like to think of themselves as poor. They think of themselves as middle class. So when you say poor people, they don't think you're talking about them. So no one ever mentions poor people. But Bill Clinton spent 3 minutes of his speech talking about the Medicaid issue. And he was very clever about it because he reframed it. He didn't mention poor people either. What he said was that 2/3 of Medicaid goes to nursing homes. Now, right. Nursing homes are old people. And you like to talk about old people when you're right. when you're in American politics because old people vote.
Is that the particular genius of Clinton as a politician, that he can actually convert really serious policy issues into what sounds like hokey politician speak that works for the masses?
Precisely. He's brilliant at it. And I'm so jealous.
Well, you've done a pretty good job at giving us more policy than we normally have on RN Drive. Chaz Licciardello from Planet America, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Jules.